podcast for geeks by geeks, where our hosts talk news headlines, comics, tech, and have in-depth discussions on all things geek. Keep calm and venture into the wasteland.
Welcome back to the Geek Followed podcast. This is your news and discussion podcast for geeks by geeks. I am your host. My name is Chris Lockhart, and joining me, one of my original co-hosts, Mr. Richard Reeder. How's it going, Rich?
Hey, how's it going? I'm doing really good. Excited to be here and do a little classic episode.
Excellent. And we are not alone. We are joined by two guest stars and maybe co-hosts at some point of Geek Fallout. And first up, Mr. Chris Gaida. How's it going, Chris?
I'm pretty good. I can't lie. I'm a little bit nervous. I haven't been on the side of the microphone for a few years now, and we'll see how it goes.
Excellent. And last but not least, we have Kevin Decent. How's it going, Kev?
It's going all right here. You know, I am glad that you brought Richard on first and did his introduction, because I needed the refresher. I get, you know, you mentioned how he was an original co-host here of Geek Fallout. I get Richard and Ice-T confused all the time because they're both OGs.
Excellent. So technically, this is the Geek Fallout Reloaded podcast. So this is, we're coming back as a seasonal podcast. So this is our spring 2021 episode. The reason why I did that is, you know, with everyone's busy schedules, you know, it's hard to commit. We used to be a weekly podcast, like back in 2012, that's what we started out as, as a weekly podcast. But then everyone got busy, and then we transitioned to other projects and so on and so forth. But I felt really nostalgic. I had Richard and Jeff on about a year ago, maybe a little bit more than a year ago, on the Pop Culture podcast. Right. Maybe a year and a half ago.
I remember that now.
Yeah, and we did two episodes. One episode we talked about Warhammer 3,000 or 5,000? 40,000. And I can't really remember the other thing we talked about in the other episode. I know we talked some Game of Thrones stuff and all that kind of stuff. But we said then, you know, we should do this more often, you know, get the old crew back. And then I was going through some old files and I came across, you know, the old Geek Fallout logo, and I was like, oh, man, we got to bring this podcast back in some capacity. So why not make it a quarterly podcast? You know, you remember a few years back, Netflix got the rights to the Gilmore Girls, and they did like a four-episode continuation, like it was like four movies. Like
a mini-series
Mini-series, and it was seasonal. You know, like the first episode was spring, the second episode was summer, you know, and that sort of thing. So we're kind of like the Gilmore Girls.
No, I do not.
we are like the Gilmore Girls of podcasting, is what I'm trying to say.
I'm not sure I'm okay with this anymore.
Ah, you're such a Rory.
Well, that's exactly who I was casting him as. I'm clearly Lorelai, right? And Richard's my daughter, and.
So clear enough that I've never seen this show.
Oh man, I watched that show pretty much to the end, and then when I came back on Netflix, I had to watch it. I mean, that's a few years ago now. I want to say that was like 2016 when they did that. That's like we're on 5 years.
Chris, sorry not to interrupt, but yep. Coincidentally, thanks to Facebook Memories, at the time of this recording is 6 years to the day of me first appearing on one of your podcasts.
Oh, wow.
Oh, wow.
That's cool.
That's crazy.
We're old.
There we go.
Yeah, well, and for a while there, like, Chris was editing, and he was on some of the other podcasts, too. Like, for a while there, it was pretty busy.
Great memories of editing.
Yeah, well, I like, my new editing program that I use, I love. But the problem with it, it's not great for this particular podcast. The reason why I say that is cut and slice segments in. Like we have our bumpers for our segments. I can't do that on this program like I could my old program. So I literally have to cut the episode one piece at a time and then put it back and reload it back on and then cut from there. So it's going to be
extremely difficult.
It's actually, well, the thing is it exports real fast. Like my old program, it would take as long, it would export at the speed of your podcast. So if you did a 2-hour podcast or a 3-hour podcast, it would export 2 or 3 hours. Yeah. And if there was any little hiccup, it would stop. And then you'd have to start all over again. But it had better options for cutting. But this one's way better in terms of not screwing up. So anyway, I digress.
That sounds like a better option then.
Yeah. All right. Well, and Kev, you've been on a few episodes of Geek Followed, I believe, back in the day.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, if I was smart, I would have kept like a list of various podcasts and all I'd been on. And now I feel like it's too much work to go back all those years.
It is. It is. For a while there, I know I was up to like 300 episodes. I can only imagine I'm probably at like 600 or 700 now. Like it's crazy. But anyway, Geek Follows back, so we're not quite into summer yet. We're still technically spring, so our summer episode will be coming out this summer.
Wouldn't you have to get this edited in the next 2 days and released to still be spring?
No, because summer doesn't start till June 20th, isn't it?
I thought it was May 21st.
I don't think so.
I'm an idiot. You're right. No, you're right. You're right. I don't know why I thought that.
Probably because
I'm toasted and drinking.
Because if I remember correctly, that is the longest day of the year because that's when we start losing time after that.
Mm.
It's hard to believe it's almost halfway through the year. Like, this is crazy. I'm happy. But what was really crazy is yesterday we had snow, like a crazy snowfall.
Ew, and, what?
Yeah, and it was heavy. It like, because last week I set out like my lawn chairs and all that kind of stuff. I had the snow was so heavy it broke a branch on one of my trees and like destroyed, well, not destroyed it, but it put that branch right through one of my end tables for my lawn chairs. So it didn't completely destroy it, but it's still salvageable. But now it has a big old hole in it. Yeah, I'm just glad it didn't go through a windshield or something. That would have sucked.
Or a person.
Yeah, that's true. I could have went through my neighbor, but that but that is Alberta. That is Canada. That is, you know, I never take my winter tires off before June. In Alberta, never do it. I always keep my winter tires on until June, just for that reason. But anyway, enough talk about weather and the whatnot. But let's get into our news segment.
Oh shit! Incoming!
All right. So, does anyone have any geek news they wish to share?
I have a couple pretty big news stories.
Definitely. All right, Rich.
One for sure.
Rich, you kick her off, buddy.
I feel like this is actually a good one to kick off because it's more of a industry news story rather than a specific IP or something coming out. So it's been reported that Amazon has been in talks for, quote, weeks to buy MGM. For around $9 billion. That would increase the Amazon Prime video service library by over 4,000 films, which would include things like James Bond, The Hobbit series, the Rocky Creed series, RoboCop, Pink Panther franchises, as well as movies like Silence of the Lambs, The Magnificent Seven, Four Weddings and a Funeral, and many more. The TV library also includes over 17,000 episodes of programming, including things like Stargate, where you have SG-1, Atlantis, Universe. They've got Vikings, Fargo, A Handmaid's Tale, Get Shorty, Condor, Fame, American Gladiators, Teen Wolf, In the Heat of the Night, The Voice, Survivor, Shark Tank, The Real Housewives of Beverly Hills, The Hills, a huge, huge amount of content for them, and could really tip the scales in the streaming wars. I hate that term, but, you know, in the streaming world, like, that is a lot of content. And I think MGM is one of the few studios left that doesn't have their own dedicated streaming network. They still have kind of deals with other people, much like Sony. Mm-hmm. Although Sony is starting to really get into bed with Netflix, and I hear that might be a thing soon too as well. But this is some very interesting news.
Yeah, that's quite the price tag. You said $9 billion.
Yeah, they say somewhere between 7 and 10, but I guess recently they've heard talks of around 9 is what they're getting close to settling on.
Yeah.
But that is pretty intense. Like, that is a major library. I don't have Amazon Prime, but I mean, like, that's a lot. And I mean, like, there's been a lot of times when I've been tempted. Like, Amazon does have a lot of really good first-run content as well.
Mm-hmm.
And that would certainly make it a lot more tempting for some people, especially since, you know, obviously you get, you know, free shipping and their photo service and, you know, like a free Audible book every month and et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So that is definitely some big news coming out of the industry side of it. Does anybody have anything else?
Go ahead.
I'd say that Sony thing, the interesting rumor for that is if Sony's ever sold to another company, like you're saying Netflix and Sony have been talking, that the entire Spider-Man IP reverts back to Marvel, same moment.
Oh, that would be amazing.
It will not be considered a Sony asset if they're ever sold.
Yeah, because they wrote that into the contract or whatever right at the beginning.
Yep, and then you just had... So AT&T is selling off Warner Media, and then Warner Media and Discovery Plus.
That happened only in 2018.
Yeah, I know.
Yeah.
So Warner Media, which is HBO Max, and Discovery Plus are going to join up, and they said that's going to take like a year or two to do all the legalities and paperwork for it.
Quarter 2022.
Yeah,
I have a little chart in front of me, which is, and I also found that interesting because Discovery also just merged with something called Scripps Network for $12 billion back in 2018.
I mean, I'm fine with all these billion-dollar companies buying each other out and combining their streaming services because that's a combined bill I don't have to pay.
Yeah, mm-hmm.
Like, sure. I was going to do Peacock and WWE Network for a total of $15. Well, now I just do Peacock for $5.
Yeah, there you go.
You know, so the more that buy each other up, the less my bill becomes.
Yeah, for sure.
Well, definitely. Exactly. I fall under that boat myself. For example, on this deal here, I have Prime, and I also have underneath Prime a subscription to the MGM suite. So I have all those MGM properties, but I'm getting it already through Amazon Prime, and I have been for about 2 years.
Oh,
so the only thing this means for me is I probably get to take off that extra $2 a month.
Oh, cool.
Then, woohoo, savings.
Yeah, that's rather interesting. See, I'm kind of an outlier. I'm still subscribed to password sharing. So I don't really have anything per se of my own. I do use Netflix sometimes, but I myself, I don't really watch it. We have access to it. I don't really watch it that much. I have curated my own drive, as it were, with Plex. So I've got my own, I think I've got like 15 gigs of media, including like wrestling and movies and TV shows and biographies, all sorts of things that I just watch that. I barely ever use any other services anymore because I have my own very curated streaming service that I built myself, essentially. Makes things much easier.
I just wanted to touch on the point that you made there, Rich, about how Amazon has a lot of good. original content. They really do. Like The Expanse, like I know it started out on Sci-Fi, but Amazon gave them a second life. I enjoy Bosch. The new Invincible cartoon. Oh man, so good.
Oh,
so good.
That was amazing.
Yeah.
Yeah. The Tick was fun. And I've heard really good things. My wife is actually currently watching The Marvelous Mrs. Maisel.
Oh, okay.
And she's really, really enjoying that. She's saying that she might get her mom to start watching it too. And then what's the other one? The Man in the High Castle.
Yes.
I've heard really good things about that being, an interesting take on, I guess, like an alternative history kind of film noir TV series sort of thing. So I've heard good things about that. They've got a lot of, and I mean, what did they say? It's like $500 million that they've spent on the new Lord of the Rings TV series that they've been producing. I think it just got reported the other day they're around $500 million or more now.
Yeah,
they've invested in it.
and they've got the Wheel of Time series coming out, which I'm really looking forward to.
It's a book series. Book.
It's a fantasy novel series that they've adapted, kind of like Game of Thrones ish, sort of. So I'm looking forward to that. I haven't read The Wheel of Time myself, but I'm looking forward to like a good fantasy series to come back.
Yeah. Oh, for sure. We need more sci-fi and fantasy for sure.
Yep.
Well, Wheel of Time is the second highest selling fantasy series ever, I believe. After Lord of the Rings.
Really?
It also depends on how you count Harry Potter, I guess, now. I forgot a bit of it. It's
longer. Yeah, that's
right. So it's probably number three.
Still.
Wow. Yeah.
That's
a major property.
Yeah. And it'll probably, if the series is good, it'll get even more major. Kind of like Game of Thrones, like how that elevated that book series.
Amazon hasn't really done a whole lot that's, like, with their big series. They haven't done a whole lot that's been bad, like maybe not the best ever, but they haven't really had any major flops necessarily that at least I know about that they've had, like their tent poles, you know what I mean? Especially like their action and their more realistic, darker, gritty type series. They've done really, really well. So I think they're definitely... you know, doing something good, especially if they can spend $500 million on Lord of the Rings.
Yep.
That's pretty darn incredible. I as we were talking about HBO earlier, actually, it reminded me, I actually saw an article earlier that was announcing that HBO Max, or I guess Warner Media, has requested or put to series a new Batman series called Caped Crusader, which will be coming from Bruce Timm, J.J. Abrams, and Matt Reeves, which is like, holy crap.
They announced a new Superman cartoon today, too.
Yes. Yeah, I was, as I was searching for this article, that one kind of scrolled by, and I was like, oh, I'll check that out later. Like, what's that? So, that's pretty amazing. I'm fairly excited about that. I don't think it said necessarily when it's going to be actually coming, but just the fact that it is announced, you know, I would assume it'll probably be out in a year, maybe two tops, right? Like, most likely a year at this point. Because if they've announced it, they've probably already been working on it for a while.
You know? Yeah, well, like Kevin Smith's been working on one of the new He-Man cartoons that's coming to Netflix.
Yep.
Because there's two coming.
Yeah.
And he's been talking about that for nearly a year, and they just showed still images of it.
Yeah. I feel like it's
a big lead time.
Maybe that's just because this year's been so long.
That's true.
Yeah, just such a burden. And you know what? Actually, this one actually feels... I got another one here that actually almost kind of feels like a burden on me. Speaking of burdens, I really don't know what to think about it. It's just, I don't know. So there's a Wednesday series of the Addams Family Wednesdays. That is a thing that's happening. Apparently Tim Burton has cast some girl named Jenna Ortega as the lead role Wednesday in the Addams Family series Wednesday that is being made. which I really don't know how I feel about it. It's going to be for Netflix. I just really don't, yeah.
Okay. So it's basically just from her perspective rather than the whole family perspective.
I guess.
The premise is it's her going off to school and her dealing with school hijinks and things like that. Very similar to the premise of the Sabrina series that was out the last few years.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Nevermore Academy.
Those that don't know Jenna Ortega, she's from basically a Disney show. She's been one of the stars from Disney that's floated around for a few series and is starting to break into movies. On a plus side, very likable and can actually act. So, worthy of moving on and actually looks like she'd fit the role.
Well, that's apparently going to be an 8-episode series. Written by Smallville creators Al Goh and Miles Millar, with Burton set to direct. So it should be interesting, but I just don't know how I feel about doing a straight-up spinoff on just Wednesday. Like, why can't we have actual Addams Family? Like, we've had all these cool dark shows like Sabrina and stuff. Like, you could do an Addams Family in that sort of light. You could even still get away with it if you wanted to go a dark yet still comedic route. You know what I mean? Like, that could still totally work right now with how the world is feeling and you know, also the amount of media that everybody's gobbling up. It would still be a success. So, like, bring us the whole family.
Well, they did do that cartoon movie. What was it, a couple years ago now?
Oh, God. That was, remind me about that.
And they did do an Addams Family show, like, I want to say in the early 2000s. Like, it was a Canadian-made show.
Welcome to the Addams Family. Here we are, the Addams Family.
Yeah, it was like the early 2000s.
I'll never get that out of my head. Yeah. Yep, that was my childhood right there, was that show after school.
But yeah, I loved the original Addams Family. It'd be neat to see like someone like Sean Astin play Gomez, because his dad played the original Gomez, right? John Astin.
Not a bad idea. Yeah,
that'd be cool. But anywho, yeah, new Addams Family. I'm kind of indifferent. I'm still waiting for that Flintstones show, which I heard originally Seth MacFarlane was attached to it, but now I heard, what's her name? Elizabeth Banks is like attached to make a Flintstones show. Yeah. I don't know how true that is, but, all right. So I got something to add to the news thing. It's not really news, but more of a commentary on something that's been floating around. So I watched a video today on YouTube about Indiana Jones 5. Apparently this is still a thing that's going to happen. Spielberg has, I guess, left the project. George Lucas has stayed on, I think, as a consultant capacity. So this is going to be, what's her name, Kathleen Kennedy, the one that runs Star Wars. And the lady writer, I can't remember her name, that made the new James Bond movie that we haven't seen yet. So I don't know. What are you guys...
You sound so bitter about that.
Well, from what I well, I've been waiting for this Indiana Jones movie for over a year now. I'm just like, oh, it's like the Black Widow movie. Like, I just want to watch them already. But that one I can give or take, don't matter to me.
Hot take.
But anyway, I just don't know how I feel about, you know,
to make me spit out my drink, man.
I just don't know how I feel about, you know, watching an 80-year-old Indiana Jones, you know?
Yeah.
Like, the Crystal Skull really gets a lot of flack, and rightfully so, I think. I think it could have been a really good movie.
It was close.
It was.
If they took out the alien shit, it probably would have worked pretty well.
Honestly, the alien stuff, that's not even what bothered me. Because it kind of fit with, like, because it took place in the 50s, And in the movies, in the a lot of movies in the 50s were alien, you know,
that's
the,
true.
That type of genre, right? So it kind of fit with that. What the him surviving a nuclear explosion in a fridge, that bothered me right off the bat.
I thought it was the LaBeoufiness.
And the LaBeouf. Yep, the LaBeoufiness.
Oh, come on. He was the best part of the movie.
Oh, God, no. Him swinging around with all those monkeys and doing the Tarzan call, that's when I almost got up and left the theater.
I actually really liked the idea of them passing the Indiana torch to Shia LaBeouf, whatever, to Shia. I've always actually been a pretty big fan of Shia.
Oh,
I really like him.
Not this
guy.
Him necessarily.
He's weird now, but like when he was like Eagle Eye and Holes and like I'm got to be the only person who liked him in all the Transformer movies he was in. Like him. I don't know what it is.
I'm not a fan of him. And I think it was bad casting. Like, I think if you're going to cast someone as, like, this was my idea. Who they should have cast was, what's his name?
The Gosling.
No, the Joker.
Heath Ledger?
No. The Joker movie that just came out. That guy.
Oh, Joaquin Phoenix?
Joaquin Phoenix, right? Because because his brother, River Phoenix, played young Indiana Jones in The Last Crusade. So it makes sense, you know? And he does kind of look like his bro, so it makes sense that he would, you know, would look as a son to Indiana Jones.
Wasn't there a young Indiana Jones TV series?
There was. There was. River Phoenix wasn't in that. But it was a different actor. But, I was actually thinking of young Indiana Jones today because, I mean, there is a precedent to be set for seeing older Indiana Jones. You know, like, because in the show, it was usually an older, like a modern-day Indy telling stories about his past. And there was even one episode where they actually had Harrison Ford telling a story. And it was when he was filming The Fugitive, because he had a big beard for his scene, and that was because he was filming The Fugitive at the time. We have seen Indiana Jones, an older Indiana Jones before. Like, it's just, you know, I don't know. I just don't. Like, the last movie, I think, was the last shot at really capturing Harrison in that role. Because, I mean, like, Harrison Ford...
Well, they've got CGI now.
Yeah.
They could just do what they did to, make him all young again. You know, Benjamin Button him or
you know? The thing is, they're, like, you take Captain Marvel, right? They did that de-aging for Samuel L. Jackson in that movie. But anytime you've seen Samuel L. Jackson running in that movie, he was running like a 70-year-old man, not as the 30-year-old or 40-year-old he was supposed to be, right?
Fair.
So, and I don't want them to recast. Like, I know there's rumors that, you know, Chris Pratt was going to be recast as Indy. I really don't think we need to do that.
I'd like to see them pass the torch, though, so that they can continue it with that same legacy while keeping it in the same universe and paying tribute to his character. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Even if you only get like five, ten minutes, not even of him, you know, doing a quick action scene and, you know, they do some quick camera work so they don't have to show him doing too much, but you get to see some CGI this and some whatever that and, you know what I mean? And then let him pass the torch and either die in a blaze of glory or ride off into the sunset and then have the other guy take over, essentially, right?
Which is what I'm assuming that they were going to do with Shia LaBeouf, but because that movie was so critically panned, it never materialized. Yeah. But anyway,
I don't think you need. Sorry, I was like, I don't think you need it to be son of Indiana Jones. Treat it like a Sherlock Holmes thing. Just recast it. Throw someone in, you know, their 40s, give or take, in there. Have them do a couple movies.
You mean like a James Bond sort of thing?
Yeah, the better example, yeah.
Yeah.
Have him do a couple of movies, you know, place it within some sort of historical thing happening around him at the same time.
Yeah.
Have that extra two or three movies, move on.
But do you think nostalgic nerds are going to let them do that without having Harrison Ford in it at all playing Indy? You think that's like there's just that's what's going to happen? The like, Crystal Skull is going to be the last thing that, you know, like.
Well, he is confirmed to be in this new movie. Like Harrison Ford is involved. But I mean, they've already done that sort of like with the Solo movie. You know, having, you know, different actor playing Han Solo.
Could you imagine if Harrison Ford became the Stan Lee of the new Indiana Jones movies? And every time he just plays like some guy on the side of the road selling oranges while they're racing by on the cliffs or something.
Well, if they did go back and reboot, like he could play his dad. You know, like Indiana Jones' dad, like the role that Sean Connery played.
No, he's got to do Stan Lee stuff. That would just kill me. That would make me the happiest person in the world. For Harrison Ford to live out the last years of his life just like as a hilarious cameo guy in the Indiana
Jones. Even better, do him like, what was the character's name, Lookie in She-Ra? So while you're watching Indiana Jones, you have to look in the background to see where Harrison Ford randomly appears in the background, crowd scene.
Oh, man, that would just make me the happiest person in the world.
Anyway, it's happening, I guess. So we'll see what happens. We'll see what happens. As far as I know, Shia LaBeouf is not attached to it, so there is that.
But that doesn't mean he isn't.
That is true. Does anyone else have any geek news that they wish to share? All right. Well, let's move on to Tech Talk with Richard.
Let the games begin.
All right. Well, I got a couple of two stories.
Okay.
Google I/O was recently. That is where Google every year basically comes out and says what they are doing with Android and what's that stupid laptop OS they have, Chrome OS or whatever that stupid thing is.
Mm-hmm.
This year they actually had a what would seem like a pretty damn interesting announcement that Google and Samsung are actually merging Wear OS and Tizen, which means that the extremely popular Samsung Gear devices and Samsung Wear devices, all of their Samsung S2, Samsung S3, like all of their watches are actually going to be running a new version of Android that is going to kind of be running a merged version of Android and Tizen. And they're going to start merging those ecosystems. And the even more intriguing part of this is the fact that Google bought Fitbit last year, and Fitbit will also slowly tie into this, and eventually it will be one large ecosystem, which will certainly make things a little bit easier for those with multiple apps that need to go from one of these devices to another, but also is just better for consumers, because this is going to streamline a lot of things and make more features available to more users with more devices, basically. So it's pretty interesting. Does anybody here have a smartwatch or a fitness tracker at all?
I did have a Fitbit a few years back, but my band broke on it, and I just stopped using it. Go ahead.
I say my wife has one, my boss has one, so I'm around it 24 hours a day.
A Fitbit or a smartwatch?
One's a Fitbit, one's a smartwatch.
Oh, okay.
I pay for a couple, but do not use them.
As in they're used by people in your household?
Yes.
Oh, okay.
Not by me.
Yeah. I recently got a new Fitbit. It's the first time I've bought a Fitbit. I actually sold my Google watch. I've been in the Google Wear OS operating system for the past, I want to say, 3 smartwatches, maybe 4. I think at this point, since the original Geek Fallout actually was probably around the first time that I got my first smartwatch. I have been almost exclusively in the Google Wear OS arena and have probably had about 10 smartwatches since the first episode of Geek Fallout, I would say.
Wow.
Maybe 11.
Why so many?
I just got the Fitbit. Just a lot. Well, so for me, a lot of the time, those are all, most of those are used. I buy, what I usually do is I'll buy like something that's a year or two old to get a better, better deal on it or something. Right. Cause I don't really like spending money, on that sort of stuff. You know, like spending $400 on a watch isn't really my thing. But spending, you know, $150 on a watch that was out a couple years ago and selling the watch that I had for $50 so that that new watch is now only $100, that makes sense to me. So I upgraded a lot doing that. Like every year or two, I would sell my old watch and kick in an extra $100 or $150 on top of what I just sold that for and get a slightly newer one sort of thing. But I always like to be, you know, on at least the outer curb of of what I can afford and what's new for technology. Cause I'm a gadget guy. You know, I love my gadgets. I love my tech. Even if I can't afford to have the newest stuff, I try to have something at least recent and fun and useful. So, yeah. But my wife just got me a brand new Fitbit recently, and I love it. So I thought it was really interesting that because they bought it, the Fitbit that I have actually has Google Assistant built into it, and it runs better on the Fitbit than it did on my, what was it called? What did I have? The Fossil Q Smart Sport Wear OS watch is what I use. That's what I used to have. We got that. Actually, we bought one for each other for our anniversary. And in like less than 2 months, we're like, wow, these watches are shit. I think it was a month later, they released the new version of it and it was cheaper and better. And we were just like, fuck. that was rather interesting. To come out of Google I/O for that to be happening, because Google and Samsung have been at odds at each other. They've been competitors for the past, I want to say 8 years now, give or take. So it's very big news in the wearable tech world. And something else actually that is literally happening at this moment as we speak, there is a live stream, that just started 13 minutes ago, revealing the brand new 2022 Ford F-150 Lightning electric pickup truck. This is the first pickup truck that will be fully electric and available in the world. This is whether or not you like electric cars or think that they're good or bad for the environment or cheap or expensive or whatever, this is a pretty big deal. Ford has been the top seller of pickup trucks. The Ford F-150 has been the top selling pickup truck for the better part of, like, I don't know, 30 years or something like that. And the fact that they are releasing an all-electric pickup truck is very big for the industry and a big win for the believers that it's good for the environment and whatever. Again, that can be debated, it's subjective, I guess, if you want it. I don't want to get into the politics of it. But it does have some very interesting specs for an electric truck, because people were kind of wondering what it was going to be able to do and what the range would be and what the price would be. Because when it comes to a pickup truck, you expect to be able to work with it. You expect it to be able to tow. You know, it's got the bed in it. You want to be able to have a large bed capacity. And Ford, at least according to the leaks that I saw before the reveal that's happening right now, are pretty damn good. Apparently it's got a bed capacity of 2,000 pounds. I don't really speak truck, but that sounds really good to me. it can tow 10,000 pounds, which is pretty darn good. I know from recent research that can essentially tow a fairly large trailer or RV, which is, you know, pretty good. If it can tow that, it can tow whatever equipment you need it to tow around. So that's pretty good. It's going to come with a range of 400 kilometers on the base model, or 480 kilometers on the extended range model. And then the underneath the hood of it is a frunk that actually has a built-in generator inside of it so that you can run basically any worksite device or anything you want up to. I think it even has a 240-volt plug as well as a 120-volt plug. So you could plug in some heavy, heavy-duty worksite equipment to this, as well as knock your socks off. It goes 0 to 100 kilometers an hour in 4.3 seconds. Joe Biden was quoted as saying, "This sucker is fast." And apparently they didn't catch it on tape, but because he did a Ford reveal conference there the other day, but he did a drive in it, and apparently somebody heard him say, "Holy shit," once they pressed the accelerator down to the max. So that's pretty fun. Mm-hmm. Also, for every one that is sold, they're actually going to include the home charger that usually costs around $500 to $1,500, depending on, I guess, what features you want in your home charger. They're throwing that in for free. That'll charge it up in about 8 hours at home. And it will also have fast charging to go from 15% to 80% in 40 minutes. And drum roll, the price is actually, at least as for somebody who's kind of knowledgeable about EVs and in the EV space and done a lot of research, $48,000 Canadian for the base model, which for an electric truck is pretty darn good. That is coming in just above the price of something like a Tesla Model 3 in Canada, which is pretty impressive, especially for 400 kilometer range. A base, the most basic featureless truck that you can, Ford F-150 that you can get in Canada is $34,000. So that's not too bad at all, considering you will no longer have to pay, you know, for gas, oil changes, regular maintenance, et cetera, et cetera. So that's pretty big news for the auto industry because, you know, if Ford's going to go there, everybody else is going to follow. So I think that that's really interesting, and I'm super excited to watch the live stream over again. Once we're done tonight, I'm going to go immediately and check that out and make sure that all these specs are correct. And I just think that this is really fun because I really like electric vehicles, and I recently got a used one. So there, I find them even more fun now that I get to drive one.
That's cool. Yeah, like I got nothing against electrical vehicles, but I think like for a truck, like, you know, if you're going to buy an electric truck, like I could see it working better in an urban setting versus, you know, like if you have to, like, say working in the oil field, I really don't think they would take off in the oil field just because, you know,
for now anyway.
Yeah.
It's
once the technology gets better,
infrastructure.
Yeah.
It's not even that, it's the infrastructure. Right. Like if you've got for instance, I've looked up where a lot of the chargers are, you know, all across the country. And I've done a lot of research on that sort of thing. And for instance, you know, I live in Ottawa and there are plenty of chargers here. There could always be more like there are in Toronto, but there are plenty of chargers here, like really in a big city environment. Yeah. You don't even really need chargers in public because if you've got 400 kilometer range, you're not driving 400 kilometers in a day. You're going to get home, plug it in. You're going to wake up with that 400 kilometers every single day, full. You wake up with a full tank, right?
Yeah.
But you get to Alberta, Saskatchewan, and parts of Manitoba, and the charging infrastructure is a lot less in those provinces, which would make it harder, not only, I guess, in the city, but especially if you needed to go farther out from the city to get to the oil fields or whatever and then get back. So until the charging infrastructure catches up where you can pull over, you know, or at work, you get to work and just plug in your vehicle at work. You know what I mean? Once that starts, they'll be able to take off. But until then, you're right. Yeah, for sure. That's a big hurdle. But for the city, yeah. I mean, like, at least here in Ottawa, and I'm sure it's probably the same in Calgary and, you know, most major cities, a lot of people that you see in pickup trucks, it's either, you know, one, maybe two people in a giant pickup truck, usually one. And if you look at the bed of that truck, it's never been touched. They're just buying it because they like they're into pickup culture, you know, and this is a big thing in the States as well. Right. Like pickup culture and actually using your pickup truck and needing it as a pickup truck are two completely different things. So this could be very good for that type of person who wants something that is high up above everybody as well as the, you know, three times a year they're going to use that bed. Now they can save a bunch of money in gas and blah, 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 as well as get to brag about saving the planet. You know what I mean? And be a douchebag about that. Be a green douchebag, you know? So it's good for those type of people for sure. And also really good for fleet service. So this will really do really well in government fleets. So if you think about municipal trucks where they're just driving around downtown watering the plants or doing landscaping or fixing potholes, you know what I mean, in major municipalities, like this is going to make a big difference. Or think about, you know, the parks rangers and stuff like that, right? Like if you've got a couple chargers out at the each park ranger station, you know, something like this could be really good because it's, you know, obviously not spraying fumes. There's not really going to be any leaking, anything. But also it's very quiet, which is really good in nature. You know, like they aren't allowed by law to be silent. There are speakers that put out sounds. Mine sounds like the Enterprise, quite literally. Chris, you got to hear it. It's hilarious. Mm-hmm. Sounds like a spaceship. But they're not allowed by law to be silent, but it is much quieter. And I mean, in a place like, you know, parks, you know, for Parks Canada, that would be really good to, you know, not disturb nature, as it were. So I think that this is really exciting, you know, and where Ford goes, others will follow.
I was thinking.
I agree.
Yeah. Oh, go ahead, Chris.
One thing I find funny is I found pickup trucks in general have had this problem for at least a decade anyway. Especially as they're getting more popular as time goes on, is a problem with the branding itself. You're bringing up a lot of the huge benefits as far as using it as a generator and, you know, its working capabilities. However, they're releasing it under the Lightning brand. And the Lightning brand is essentially, you know, their sports brand, which is closer to, performance and closer to what a Mustang is. The people buying the Lightning pickup generally aren't the people using it as a work truck.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
I mean, you'll have the occasional person, but the crossover isn't that high.
Oh, yeah.
So it's almost like they're trying to do too much and sending mixed messages. Like, is it the
Ford is work truck
that you really need, or is it the performance that you're really going for?
Although, to be fair, 4 seconds to get to 100 kilometers an hour or 60 miles an hour is pretty damn fast for a pickup truck.
Yes.
You know, like I'd say that that's probably as fast as the Lightning, the actual Ford Lightning F-150s that used to come out. I don't think they've released one in a few years. But I know they used to be really, really cool, but they would look different too, right? Like they were much more street cool. And it's, I think, like, one thing you're touching on there is that Ford is kind of definitely messing with their legacy brand names and bringing them back in such a way that pisses off the original owners or enthusiasts of those brands. Like, you take a Mustang, and then you make it electric, and then you turn it into a four-door SUV. You know, and then now you're taking a Ford F-150 Lightning, which is usually a two-door small cab, low-to-the-ground pickup truck with a short bed. You know what I mean? Like, those are very small. Like, it's like a Chevy S10. Those are small trucks meant for speed and, you know, for putting, you know, a case of beer in the back of that truck, you know, and now you're turning it into the regular F-150. So the marketing is definitely not where it needs to be with Ford specifically, for sure.
I am glad they brought the Bronco back. Cause, I think that's going to be my next purchase when I go to get a new vehicle. But, anyway, is that all you got there, Rich, for tech?
Yep.
Alrighty. Perfect. Thank you very much.
That wasn't enough for you?
No, it was fantastic. All right, well, let's move on to Comic Corner.
But Aquaman, you cannot marry a woman without gills. You're from two different worlds. Oh, I've wasted my life.
All right.
Would that be me?
Yes. So we, Comic Corner, and I'm turning it over to Kevin because he knows way more about comics than I do. How's it going, Kev?
It's going all right, Chris. So we mentioned the Warner Brothers Discovery buyout thing going on earlier in this episode.
Yep.
Interesting thing, when they're announcing all the assets of Warner Brothers, never once did DC Comics come up.
Huh.
Not once. I'm still leaning towards, and I think with a new owner we'll really get an idea of it, I still lean towards DC will no longer publish comics sometime in the next couple years, but they will still want that IP farm, so they will instead farm out to another company. So it'll be something like IDW or Boom. They'll say, hey, here's all the characters. You don't own them, but you can hire the writers. You can figure out the plot. You can do all the things, and we own it. So if someone likes your little story here, we can make a movie, a cartoon, an animated, you know, direct-to-DVD, whatever, and we own it. You don't. But thank you very much for creating the story. Here's some money. I absolutely think they're going to not want the hassle of running a publishing company as well with everything.
Yeah.
I think if they were smart, and I wish Disney would do it too, is add an ebook service to your streaming platform. Hey, I can bring up HBO Max or Disney Plus on any sort of tablet device, and oh, look, here's all the comics too that they own with their IP in it, and I could read them as well right in this app. I think that'd be a very smart thing to get more readers going.
Oh, yeah.
But I talked to my local comic store, and I was finding out all about the new Marvel distribution as well.
Hmm.
Because Penguin will be handling the Marvel distribution coming, what is it, October, I think?
I think so.
Instead of going through Diamond. So we still don't know, like, is Diamond going to just... Well, Marvel's in a separate catalog anyways. But are they going to have Marvel ads in there all? Or is it going to be, you know, like just two different catalogs from two different publishers come at the end of the month for us to, you know, pick out what comics we want? Don't know. But Penguin said, we'll ship them. And Diamond counts as another person that we ship to. So if you want to continue to go through them, you can. Okay. Well, if I'm a shop ordering hundreds of copies a month from Marvel, if not thousands, each and every month, you can get them, and this is just like dirty math numbers here and all. Like, I certainly don't have, you know, detailed numbers. About half price is what they sell it to you for. And Penguin's doing free shipping.
Mm.
Or you can do Diamond, and it might be a little less than half, might be like $49, but you have to pay for all the shipping.
Hmm.
And their shipping is about like, what did they say it was? Like 3% of what the total is, they're guessing the shipping cost would be, something like that. 3 to 5%, which is probably about right. Yeah, you're going to go Penguin for the free shipping. Are you kidding me?
Yep. That for the and
hundreds of thousands?
Sorry. The other thing that Penguin is doing that Diamond is not, that makes a difference to a lot of the smaller stores, is Penguin is only charging after sale of the books,
yep,
where Diamond is charging beforehand on delivery.
Hmm.
Yeah.
So this gives people, when a hot book is expected to come out, the opportunity to increase their purchases in hopes that it's going to sell.
I mean, where, I remember... Sorry, go ahead.
Craig, and let's face it, comic book stores haven't been known for having great credit. No. And this affects a lot of retailers. That just that ability to have the product first,
mm-hmm,
helps their sales.
Well, yeah, just the difference between, hey, I could order 100 copies of this, knowing I'm going to sell the full 100 copies, but I don't have the money for 100 copies right now. I remember working at a bookstore when a new Harry Potter book came out, and they're like, we're good for the quarter from one night. You know, because you know it's going to sell that much. But they couldn't have put that money up front. They wouldn't have had that, a cash for it. But I mean, like, I know because I go every Wednesday, I know this Batman Fortnite comic is insane and it's selling out right away. Most of these stores could order 50, 100, a couple hundred copies of it, and it's going to sell out because it has that freaking Fortnite code in it. But they can't, they wouldn't have been able to put thousands of dollars down up front for it. For a book that DC gave them like 1 week notice on, by the way, we're shipping this. We need your orders in a couple days. So I think the hassle of, oh, I need to now go through multiple programs to order my books is worth it for the money you're saving and that paying later. I think, if anything, you might see numbers for a lot of them going up. Like you were saying, Chris, if I got to pay later, it might be worth the risk on it.
Interesting.
I just want more people reading comics all the time.
Yeah, me too. And I miss the old days, you know, the you know, where you'd see the spinner racks, you'd see them at the grocery store, you know. It just sucks the way the industry works now.
I still say do like a thick square bound manga type thing for newsstands, have it be like a bunch of black and white newspaper print comics, and say if you want new flashy ones, here's 1-800-COMIC-BOOK, find the local store in your area.
Mm-hmm.
But in the meantime, here's like $5 on the magazine stand, you know, that mom or dad could get you to shut you up on a family trip or something.
Yep. Yeah, like the old DC Digests and stuff like that. Like I miss those.
Perfect. Yeah.
Yeah. But, all right. So, any other comic news there, Kevin?
Oh, there's always cool stuff. They just announced a Batman horror crossover starting in August, where Scarecrow is going to take over Gotham. DC's current, what the heck are they calling it? Infinite something? I've already forgotten. Infinite Frontier, maybe?
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah, so it's going to spotlight like a lot of the newer characters and even just ones that, I mean, Harley Quinn's within the last 20 years, but she's still newer for Batman. Poison Ivy was kind of a joke, but when you pair her with Harley Quinn, she's become an incredible character out of that. And then stuff like Lucius Fox has a kid that's getting involved in it. There's, because I had to buy two covers a couple weeks ago, Miracle Molly's new character. Clown Hunter looks like he's going to be involved in it, which is messed up. Todd McFarlane's going to start a Spawn Universe line with different kinds of Spawns as like a team-up book, and it'll be his other monthly comic to go along with Spawn, which is still going.
Yep.
And still no word on what the heck is happening with Predator, because Marvel's doing an Alien comic, which is very good and successful and all, and they were supposed to start Predator, I think, in May or June.
I think so.
And I didn't. Yep, out of nowhere it got dumped, and everyone's guess was, oh, you're pulling a big crossover title, and you're going to wait for your Penguin deal, because this is going to be like hundreds of thousands of seller.
Yep.
No, the two original screenwriters for Predator are saying that they own it.
Really?
So now it's kind of, it's the same like with the Friday the 13th rights.
Yeah.
They're saying enough time has passed and enough, you know, it's passed through enough hands that it reverts back to them now.
Huh. So they're looking for a payday.
Everything's on hold for Predator.
Yeah. Because, yeah, the theory I had heard was that they were going to actually pull it back and then it was going to be like a Halloween release. But
yeah, that was what I heard first, too. But no, I guess everything Predator is on the shelf right now until, I mean, they're going to just throw the money and say, shut up and get out of here.
Yeah.
But you got to go through the whole process of it first.
And, I mean, kudos to those guys. Like, I mean, why not? Like, if, you know, especially if Disney owns Marvel. You know, I think Disney can afford it.
Yeah, well, and look at all the stuff where, you know, we finally get a movie or a cartoon or a whatever for a project. We're thinking, how come it took so long? And then you find out, oh, well, because the rights were tied up with this one studio for 10 years that did nothing with it, and they finally reverted back. Yep. So I don't know if it happens.
Oh, yeah. Yep. But yeah, speaking of DC, like I noticed, cause remember last year they were talking about like they were going to do like a reboot again of the line, and they were going to age the characters up to what they should be, and that you're going to get like a new Batman, a new Superman. So they're kind of already doing that sort of now. Because supposedly, in the Superman books, coming up not too long, Superman's going to be leaving. I'm not exactly sure where he's going. Going somewhere out in the galaxy. And Superboy, who last I heard was in the 31st century, living with the Legion of Superheroes, he's coming back and he's going to be the new Superman. He's basically taking over for his dad. Yeah, I don't know. Like, part of me is like, no, that's stupid. I kind of like what they were doing, that they shipped him off to the Legion of Superheroes. I kind of like that angle, because, I mean, it's, you know, they've done it before, right? But at the same time, you know, one of the complaints that I always have, or that I've heard, and I've made this complaint too sometimes, is that comics, you know, no one wants to do anything different. You know, everything kind of always stays the same, right? So the fact that they're doing this, you know, part of me doesn't want them to do it. But on the other hand, it's like, well, you know, maybe we do need a change. You know, maybe this is what the Superman franchise needs right now.
But and they're doing it with their big three. And actually, there's new Green Lantern. Well, there's always new Green Lantern. But
which is actually really good. I actually really like that new Green Lantern book that they've done. Yeah.
But I like the way that they're doing this, because it's more, it's not like, oh, it's a flat out replacement. The person you've been following for years is gone. Here's the new one.
Yeah.
Shut up and enjoy it. It's more like you have your old guard, your classic one, saying, hey, I have to do other stuff sometime that's not in the city I protect. I'm getting older. I need some to know that when I'm not here, my city is still safe. So we're going to start now while I'm still around and get you ready. Okay, cool. That makes sense.
Yep.
I still have my classic character, and then we're building up this new talent here. That works.
Yep.
We'll see if it continues, but I'm okay with that.
Yeah, I'm all for it. I don't know, like, because that was the rumor, like, why they got rid of Dan DiDio, because he was going to do this big reboot, and then it never happened. But now they kind of are doing these little touches where, like, continuity is not a linear thing now, I guess, for DC. Like, they can do their own stories, and I'm okay with that. Like, there's a new Batman miniseries called The Detective, which is an older Batman, which, you know, I only read the first issue, but I like that, you know, we could do these different type of stories without them being, like, an Elseworlds, necessarily, right? Kind of, you know, it frees it up, as long as the essence of the character's there.
Yep, as long as it is true to who the character is.
Yep,
I'm fine with that. Yep. I don't want to see Batman coming in guns a blazing. That's not true.
Yep.
But I don't feel like, oh, well, this Batman can't fit into the continuity because he says he was here, but he was also here. He can't be in the same place twice. No, I don't care. Just tell me a good story. In whatever amount of time you need it collected for a graphic novel, cool. As long as the essence for the characters remains the same, this is just your story, awesome. The whole point's for me to enjoy it, not to figure out where it fits in 80 years of continuity.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. All right. Well, thanks, Kev. Appreciate all the comic talk. But I think we got to move on to our top five.
My book report is on the giving tree. Nerd!
All right, so for our top five for Geek Fallout Reloaded Spring 2021, I've got the top five badass moments in pop culture. So these are the moments, and this is my way of thinking. They're the moments that, you know, you put the DVD in, you just go to that scene. Or you're on YouTube, you type in, you just want to see that one scene from that one movie. You don't necessarily want to watch the whole movie. You just got to see that scene. Now, Rich, you said you were having a hard time coming up with the top five. So you're just going to sit this one out and just throw comments out?
Yeah, pretty much. Okay. Yeah. I was a little bit in a rush, and I guess I was trying to – I thought of it more broader. I was confused. I was like, does he mean like in general in life? Like, you know, like, oh, this person cast in this movie or something, or that person died or something. Like, I wasn't quite sure what you meant, so I just, I was rushed.
No problem. All right, so we'll, and the way we do the top fives on Geek Fallout is we do a countdown. So I'll kick it off. Number five on my list is Riggs and Murtaugh take on Jet Li in a final fight.
Ooh.
From Lethal Weapon 4. Now, this is the fight when it's just the two of them. They're fighting at the dock, and it's a fight to the death. You know, Jet Li's trying to kill them, and they know it. And it was such an awesome fight scene. It's one of those, I go on YouTube and I rewatch that scene. It's so fantastic because Riggs and Murtaugh literally get the shit kicked out of them. But of course, they win, and it was just awesome. It was an awesome fight scene. Let's go with Kevin. Number five on your list, sir.
All right. I'm going to, and my ranking could change anytime, hour from now, day from now,
yeah,
week from, you know, just in the moment what I'm thinking. So I'm going to throw out there Neo and Trinity rescuing Morpheus.
Nice.
In The Matrix. Yep. Oh my gosh. It's, and I know watching it now with like Blu-ray and 4K and stuff like that, but man, that movie was just like, there was a before and after.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
For seeing that first movie. That was stunning. Just no idea how they even did it. It was so crazy. It was so nuts.
Yeah.
And you're just like, this is amazing, and I will be willing to go out this theater, turn around, pay more money, and see this again.
Been a while since there's been a moment like that.
Oh, yeah, this is just groundbreaking. Like, yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I'm going to have to piggyback off of Kevin, because my number five was Bullet Time.
Ooh, nice.
Very good.
Which is basically the same thing. Let's face it, Matrix, the way it came out with Bullet Time for the first time, revolutionized the way action sequences are filmed.
Oh, yeah.
And again, it sort of blew everybody away. Exactly. It changed the perspective that people look at action.
Yeah, for sure. And I mean,
that's what made it so compelling, and specifically those scenes.
Oh, yeah. And even with The Matrix in general, like you like in, at least in my opinion, you could have also said like, you know, like Neo versus Smith.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? Like that scene, like at the time, at least now it doesn't, like the CG doesn't hold up as well. But that moment was so intense. You know what I mean? Like it was just this huge, huge moment of him finally facing off against him full on and really realizing all of his powers and everything, you know, that also, I think, would have been an acceptable moment from that series for sure.
Excellent. And I just want to throw in an honorable mention because we're talking about The Matrix. Like, I know the sequels did not live up to the original movie, but that freeway chase from Reloaded.
Oh, yeah.
Awesome.
I was thinking about mentioning it just now, but I was like, I'll leave it out.
It's so cool.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, for sure. One of the best freeway or highway fight scenes in movie history, I would say. Like, absolutely. Still to this day, for sure.
Yep. All right. So Chris went. So I'll go with my number four. And this is from this is the only time Star Trek's on my list. I do have a Star Trek honorable mention. Number four, this is from Star Trek III, The Search for Spock, when Kirk and the boys steal the Enterprise. I love that scene. I love it, you know, like them, Scotty's got the Enterprise all rigged up to, so they can automatically fly it, you know, and they're going against Starfleet orders, you know, because Kirk is trying to help McCoy. He doesn't yet know that Spock's alive, but he's got to go recover Spock's body. And basically, yeah, these guys are literally throwing their careers away to steal the Enterprise to help their friends. And I love, you know, the fact, you know, that this new ship, the Excelsior, is powering up to pursue. And you know, and they're all cocky thinking, oh, yeah, we're going to catch these guys. But little do they know they've been sabotaged. I love that scene. I've watched, like, it's one of those scenes I go onto YouTube every once in a while and just watch. Especially, like, when they're getting, you know, just about to the door and Kirk's telling Scotty, you know, okay, open the door. And, well, I can't. And well, he's like, well, what? Or I forget exactly how the line goes, but basically Scotty's still trying to hack into the doors to open it. And then they manage to open them just at the last second, and the Enterprise just makes it through space dock. And then, of course, they warp away, which is fantastic. Kevin, number four on your list, sir.
All right, I'm going to go for the other star. I'm going to go for Star Wars.
Excellent.
Specifically, I Love You, I Know.
Nice.
That is just, it sums up everything. You just fall in love with them as a couple. You fall in love with Han Solo as a badass, not, you know, 80-year-old Indiana Jones. But it's just so perfect. And him being brave despite everything. Oh, gosh, it's awesome. Honestly, like, I loved it when I was a kid. But I think when you revisit Star Wars as an adult, and you see things like Luke and Leia kiss. What the hell's going on? And there's lots of hokey stuff. That line and that scene just holds up no matter what, though.
Yep. That and Darth Vader's like the harshest father-in-law ever. You know, you're dating my daughter? You're getting in a carbonite, asshole. I know he didn't know at the time that was his daughter, but I kind of think maybe, you know, he had an inkling. You know, he's like, you know what? I've had enough of this fucking boyfriend. Excellent. Yeah, and that was like an improvised line too, because when I watched the making of Empire Strikes Back, or I can't remember which one it was, Ivan Kershner, the director, because originally the line was Leia says I love you, and then he says I love you too, and they were like, that just sounds lame. And then Irvin Kershner just told Harrison Ford, say the first thing that comes to your mind. And then that's what he said. He said, I know. So that was totally Harrison Ford. And that was pretty badass for sure. All right, Chris, number four on your list, sir.
Okay. Like Rich, I was having a hard time figuring out exactly what to do. The topic is pretty broad. So I did my best to try to not duplicate myself and gather stuff from completely different areas. So this time I'm going to go with a book moment, which luckily has been duplicated on television very, very well. It's one of my all-time favorite characters, Tyrion Lannister, as he's being accused of killing King Joffrey, demanding to have trial by combat. Nobody would expect somebody with his physical limitations in that scene and that situation to demand something so odd.
Yep.
And that just goes to why I think he's one of the best characters ever written. Because he thinks in a way that, like, oh, holy crap, like, that's genius, sort of. And you have no idea what to expect next.
Yeah.
And I think that's awesome.
Yep. Excellent.
Like, and the fact that he didn't know what to do next was just as great, but he bought himself time and it worked out. Like,
it didn't work out for Prince Oberyn, but... That guy definitely had a headache after that one. All right. Excellent. No, and yeah, he did the trial by combat at the Eyrie as well in book one, where Bronn stepped in for him.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. That's awesome. Originally, because he wanted Jaime to fight for him, but they wouldn't let him. So then Bronn said he'd fight for the little guy, and then it worked out well. All right, so we are on number three. So for me, number three, I'm going to pick a scene from the Marvel Cinematic Universe. And it's from Captain America, the Winter Soldier. And it is Cap fighting Hydra agents in elevator, then jumping to freedom. I love that scene. You know, like he's just had his meeting with, what's his name there? Robert Redford's character. And, you know, he gets in his elevator. He's, you know, he's going down, and then all these other guys start, you know, the elevator's making multiple stops, and more big dudes walk in. And then at one point, he's looking around, and he's realizing what's happening. That, you know, oh, these guys are, you know, they're going to try and fight me. And then I just love that line when they're all standing and looking at the door, and Cap says, you know, before we get started, does anyone want to get out? And then, yeah, then he kicks their butts. And then, the elevator stopped. He can't, you know, the soldiers are coming. There's no way out, so he decides to jump. And he breaks the window and jumps and falls, I don't know how many stories, you know, to the plaza below. And, thank God for his shield, because it, took the brunt of the fall for him. And, it was just an awesome scene. And then him getting on the bike and then taking down the shield plane with a shield and, getting away. It was just absolutely awesome. So that's number three on my list. Kevin, number three on your list.
All right, sticking with superheroes here. A second movie in the superheroes franchise and all. Mm-hmm. And forgive me if I get the quote wrong, but I believe it's something like, "General, do you care to step outside?" From Superman 2 when he confronts Zod.
That's a good one.
I love that so much when I was a kid. I mean, for years and years and years, Superman 2, I think, was the best comic movie we had.
Yep.
And the funny thing is, it still holds up. It wasn't that it was good because we didn't have better. It's still good. And I just love, after everything he's been through, when he finally confronts them, and it's such a fun fight, and it's so well done. Like, it's well done for the time, but it just flows now, too.
Mm-hmm.
I have slight problems when they're in the Fortress of Solitude. There's some weird stuff going on there. But otherwise, the actual fight in downtown Metropolis is fantastic. And I just love when he confronts them. He looks, that's everything Superman should be right there in that moment.
Mm-hmm. Excellent. Chris, number three on your list.
Okay, to follow up on some comic-y stuff, I'll go with number three as Scarlet Witch at the end of the House of M.
Oh,
deciding on spur of the moment that there would be no more mutants.
Good pick.
Not only was it a badass moment from the character showing her vast, vast power,
mm-hmm.
it's also kind of a badass moment just for Marvel Comics in general, taking quite a risk in getting rid of so many characters. For those that don't know, they took down the vast majority of the mutant side of their lineup, mm-hmm. which at that point was probably about half the books they published, and they pared everything down so there was only 198 mutants left with the powers on the planet, which means a lot of mutants died, a lot just became depowered and had to figure out what to do afterwards. But yeah, the unexpected scope of that decision was huge, and in some ways still plays off in comics, and that's close to 20 years ago.
Yep.
Good pick.
Yep. Excellent. All right, so we'll go with our number twos. Number two on my list, and I just wrote this down as we were talking earlier in this episode, because I totally remembered it. Indiana Jones chasing down the Ark on horseback. So this is the scene in the desert when the Nazis, you know, have the Ark, and they believe they've sealed Indiana Jones for to his death, but they kind of suspect, no, because that the plane they were going to fly the Ark out on blows up, and what's his name, the French guy, Belloc, knows it. He curses Jones's name when he sees the plane, so he knows that this is Indiana Jones's work. But then when they take it out on truck, they're going on a convoy out the desert, and Indiana Jones grabs a horse and goes after them. You know, and he jumps on the troop transport, fights a bunch of Nazi soldiers. And yeah, it was just a badass scene. He gets shot, he gets thrown in front of a truck. He has to crawl under a truck while it's still in motion to get back on and take over the truck again. The John Williams music is fantastic. So, you know, Indiana's theme is just so prevalent in that scene. It's awesome. And yeah, just Indiana Jones kicking some ass. And that's my favorite action scene from Indy. All right, Kevin, number two on your list.
All right, so this is tough because I said when I started this, you could ask me different times and I'll have different answers.
Yep.
So I'm going to call this my overall wrestling spot for a badass moment in wrestling.
Mm-hmm.
I could pick Hogan slamming Andre.
Mm-hmm.
I could pick Steve Austin in the sharpshooter when Bret Hart had the sharpshooter applied and the blood is just pouring down his face in between his teeth and he will not give up. Amazing moment.
Yeah.
The formation of the NWO.
Oh, yeah.
Would work for sure. I would even, it's kind of been forgotten over the years, but when the first season of NXT ended and all nine of them showed up on Raw as the Nexus and beat up everyone and destroyed the entire ring, the stage, the announce table, everything.
That was insane.
It was so shocking. You're like, oh my God, they just made these nine people main eventers in 10 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
It was amazing. It's not what happened over time, but that's what it looked like in the moment, though.
Yeah.
And, you know, the more and more I dive into stuff, and thankfully for wrestling, stuff happens all the time, too. Like, at number two, I'd just be like, here's where I'm putting what I think the coolest wrestling thing is today.
So, Kev, I missed that. What was that again?
I was just saying, like, pick one of them.
Oh,
my number two is an overall wrestling spot.
I was like, but like, what's the?
Nope. Just pick just one.
The, oh, okay.
The mic to drop.
Yeah, that's what I was waiting for. I was like, maybe
not even. What about the Jericho New Japan Pro Wrestling reveal or All In reveal? Like, oh man, those were insane.
Even Jericho's debut on Raw.
Yeah, put him
right against The Rock. Like, oh my God,
I mean,
fantastic.
I would say that the especially the NJ New Japan one where he just kind of showed up out of nowhere and revealed himself was so intense because he had never been outside of or hadn't been to Japan in years and hadn't really left WWE in like what 20 years at that point or something. Like he'd always been a WWE guy, and it was so shocking to see him in another wrestling promotion, right? Like it was so insane. Like I remember when I watched that New Japan, was it Wrestle Kingdom? I think it was.
Yep.
I was literally like screaming, and my wife came in from the next room and yelled at me because she was trying to sleep. She was very angry, but I was like literally screaming. I was just like, what? Just like over and over. It was crazy. Yeah.
And I don't know if you saw Jericho
it's
on
fake, Steve asshole, shut up.
I don't know if you saw Jericho on Steve Austin's Broken Skull Sessions, his little sit-down interview show on WWE. But Jericho with AEW now, they signed a deal that he could appear on the show and just talk about it. And he's like, that was supposed to be a one-time deal because no one thought we would get the reaction we did.
Oh, yeah.
And then it became once more, and then it became once more. And suddenly Vince is like, are you working for them or for me? I'm I'm not under a deal with you, so.
Yeah, well, what do you want to do? Do you want a deal? Nope, guess I'll see you later.
Yeah.
Basically, right?
Yep, and that just opens the door to All Elite, and at that time of recording, they announced a massive television change for them, which means they're going to get even bigger.
Oh, yeah, they're so set, right? They're going over to TBS now from TNT and then adding another show. Except, thankfully, it's only going to be 1 hour instead of three.
Ugh. Let me tell you, whichever one of these promotions does a one-hour all-women show, it's going to be shocked when the ratings come in, I think. I think that's the only thing someone's not willing to do yet, and I think whenever they do, they'll be pleasantly surprised.
You mean like in the form of, what's that one from Japan, Starlight or something? Or
yeah, Stardom, maybe. Yeah.
Yeah. That would be intense, for sure. I'd watch that. I've seen a couple of Stardom matches. They're pretty crazy.
You ever see...
Very entertaining.
Sorry to hijack the show. Chelsea Green was in Japan, and she's wrestling against, you know, tiny little pixie of a Japanese wrestler. And there's a language barrier, so it says, into the corner and maybe dropkick? She's like, all right, sure. There's a gif of the dropkick and people reacting to it. They took her face off.
Oh my God.
Absolutely ridiculous. Just like car crash level whiplash from it. And you're like, how? How is there that much strength and speed and force behind this? It's because they know what they're doing over there. That's why.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Well, to go on another tangent, have you, like, I know most of you guys are streaming, but maybe some of you guys have regular television too. Have you guys seen those Tide commercials with Stone Cold and Ice-T?
Yes.
I love those. The cold calls.
Yeah. It's ridiculous, but I love it.
Yeah, I laughed. It was good. I want to see more of that. All right, well, okay, so Chris, we're still on number two, right? Number two on your list.
Yeah. All right, so I'm going to switch format again, and I want something that represented the video game world.
Okay.
And unfortunately, it was really hard to narrow down because there's been... If you guys don't know, there's been a lot of cool moments in video games.
Mm-hmm.
But the one I can think of as sort of being the most shocking and it's really groundbreaking for the time was at the end of Metroid.
Yeah.
If you finished that game in 5 hours or less, you got a little surprise sequence. And that's when Samus takes off the armor. And it's finally revealed that this hero you've been playing with all this time is, oh my God, a woman.
Hmm.
Which sounds really cheesy at this point, but at that time it was almost unheard of to have female heroes.
Yeah.
And for one to be so popular as Samus was at the time, to be revealed as a woman, like that was actually a pretty major
reveal
move by took a lot of guts by the company itself.
Yep.
So I think that qualifies as absolutely, a badass moment for video games.
Yeah. Oh, good call.
I think the crazy thing was too for that, as people found out, you know, you talk at school, oh my gosh, here's what happened at the end. It didn't ruin it for you. It made you want to get the game and try to do it yourself.
Mm-hmm. Oh, absolutely. Excellent. All right. Well, we have reached number one on the list. And I want to just say Avengers Endgame and, you know, drop the mic.
Yeah.
Because that whole movie was fantastic. I would say, honestly, that's probably my best movie experience, seeing that movie the first time ever. You know, because I had no idea what to expect. Like, I was like, okay, well, they must be traveling through time because of the stills I saw. I seen Ant-Man in New York during the Battle of New York, and he wasn't Ant-Man yet. And, you know, I didn't know what to expect, right? And I really did stay away from spoilers, like, you know, but I mean, kudos to the Russo brothers, to Kevin Feige, Marvel, all them guys for keeping so much of this under wraps. You know, like, this totally could have been ruined, but they really kept it close to the vest. So much so, like, even the actors, you know, like the Tony Stark funeral scene, they were all told it was going to be a wedding scene. So they were all dressed up in nice clothes, thinking they're going to a wedding for in the movie, and then they find out, oh, this is Tony's funeral. So even they were kept in the dark about a lot of things. But definitely, you know, my favorite part of that movie was when Cap lifts the hammer. Because, like there was so much going on in this movie, it didn't even register to me. Like when Ragnarok, the movie Ragnarok happened and they destroyed Mjolnir, my first reaction at its destruction was, well, that sucks. We're never going to see Cap wield it. Because I knew he had to wield it at some point. So when Thor brought it back with him, I didn't even think about it. Like, there was so much going on, I didn't even think about it, you know? But then when you see the hammer lifting up as, you know, Thanos is about to kill Thor, immediately I knew what was going down. And I remember, like, everyone in the theater, you know, everyone gasping at the same time. And then, you know, the hammer hits Thanos and then flies back and Cap catches it. Like it is awesome. Like the whole theater cheered, and I've never had a movie experience like that before. Like where everyone was like I was cheering. Like, you know, everyone was yelling at the top of their lungs. It was awesome. So
you think that beats out the other major scene, like moments before that on your left?
No, that was after. That was after. Was it? Yeah, because they're pretty close. They were pretty close.
I remember literally crying when On Your Left happened.
Yeah,
I just started breaking down, and my wife was like, "Oh, for fuck's sakes, really?"
Yeah.
She was like, "It's a fucking comic book, you nerd."
I know.
I was like, "I can't help it."
Well. The end of the movie, because it was the same weekend as the Calgary Comic Con, so I was there with a bunch of my buddies, right? And we all went and seen the movie together. And the end of the movie, you know, Cap goes back in time, you know, and he's aged up or whatever, and then they show him back in time with Peggy, and they're dancing. I was literally, like, almost crying. Like, my eyes were tearing up. I was biting my lip because I didn't want to cry in front of my friends. And as you know, the credits started going, like, my buddy Jeff turned to me. He's like, "It was a good movie." And I couldn't even talk. I was like, mm-hmm. Because I knew I was about to burst out crying. It took me, like, probably at least a good 5 minutes to collect myself after that movie. Because there was it hit on so many levels. You know, not only, things like Cap lifting the hammer, you know, On Your Left, all that kind of stuff. You know, Tony having his reunion with his dad, which was very touching. You know, and all the little callbacks, you know, the little cameos. You know, all the rewards, like, you know, like, oh, that's from the Ant-Man movie. Oh, that's, you know, from, you know, like the Ant-Man and the Wasp movie, like when she answers Cap and says, "We got a Cap," and then they kind of look at each other. It's like, oh, that's a callback to Ant-Man and the Wasp. You know, Rene Russo showing up. There was so much going on. And so much of it was kept quiet, and I loved that. Because it seems like nowadays, like, so many movies get ruined before you even get a chance to see them. For this one, like, I remember sitting down thinking, please, God, don't let them screw this up. Please let, you know, because Infinity War was a great movie. And I was like, obviously they have to win this movie. But even, like, the movie kept right down to the wire, man. Like, when Thanos puts the gauntlet on again, and he's about, you know, and then Captain Marvel, like, stops him. Like, I was like, Jesus, like, they're really, you know, pushing this. Are they going to win? You know, like, is, you know, is there going to be a third movie? Like, what's happening?
That would have been quite the reveal.
but I mean, even then I was like, they got to win, but yet Thanos is really kicking some ass here. But yeah, all around. So my badass moment is Cap lifting the hammer, because that was probably, for me, my best moment going to a movie. Cause like I've never been to a movie where the whole crowd like just cheered like that. And I've shared the video a few times on Facebook from, you know, people recording it from different theaters and similar reactions occurring. My theater was totally like that. It really was. Like, everyone was cheering and clapping and crying. And, I remember the second showing, you know, people were doing that. Because I went and seen it the next day. You know, and when Thanos destroys, you know, the Avengers compound, you know, people were gasping and, oh my God, you know, like freaking out. And it was just great. It was great to have that experience. All right, Kevin, number one on your list.
So I cannot pick one of the moments. So I can't say I completely agree with you, but I'll say like 15 minutes of that movie. Not just Cap wielding Mjolnir, not just On Your Left, but also Avengers Assemble. Finally.
Yep.
Took us, you know, 10 years. We knew it was coming. And honestly, even before picking up Mjolnir, when it's just Cap by himself and he takes the broken shield and he pulls it taut against his broken hand and wrist and forearm and marches alone against this army, I'm like, oh my God. And you know something's going to happen, but you don't know what when you're watching it. You're like, it is one man against evil and he will not stop. And then everything else happens. It's my favorite 15 minutes in anything. And it's, imagine, like, they took Captain America from the Marvel movies, who us reading comics for years, it was a joke. Absolute joke. Oh, he's a teenager this week. He's Cap Wolf now. You know, like, all this crap that we grew up with. And they made him the most wholesome and honorable, yet badass and amazing character through these movies. That he's just an icon, how he should have always been. Imagine if someone could have done that with Superman over the last 10 years, you know?
Yeah.
He's not dark. He's not grim and gritty. He's just, you know, he stands up for what's right and he doesn't budge.
Well, and
it's fantastic.
And not just that, but the fact that they cast Chris Evans, like I remember when they cast him, I was like, ugh, you know, like he's Johnny Storm from the Fantastic Four movies, you know, that guy from, I think he was on another teen movie. I was like, that's Cap.
Yep.
And he's Cap now to me. Like I couldn't imagine them having cast anyone else but him now.
No, and he lives it too.
Yep.
Oh, he's amazing.
Yep. Yep, fantastic. Yeah, so many great moments from that movie. Chris, number one on your list, sir.
All right, this is going to be absolutely nothing at all like the last two number ones. I'm going to jump over to the world of music. And back in 1956, rock and roll is relatively new. It's only been around for a couple of years. You know, largely only played by minorities at this point. It's just taking off. Nobody knows if it's really going to fully take off or not. And this young man by the name of Elvis Presley goes on the Milton Berle show and starts shaking his hips, which is a huge, huge risk at that time because of, you know, perceived behavior. And he had it was a very strong possibility that his career was going to be over after that moment. Because there was going to be a lot of outraged people and, you know, the perceived sexuality of it. And if that had happened, well, we might not have rock and roll the way that we currently do. But he took a chance, and I think it worked out fairly well.
Yep. Excellent. Excellent pick. So Chris, are you an Elvis guy?
Not in particular.
No? Oh,
okay. I mean, there is Elvis songs I do like, yep. But I wouldn't say like I'm a huge fan. It's yeah. All right.
Yeah. No.
But the fact that he would take a chance like that and do it like this.
Yeah, absolutely. No, I was going to say, like, where I live, there's a, we didn't have one last year, and there's not one this year, but there's an Elvis festival called the Blue Suede Music Festival. I like Elvis. I would consider myself a fan. I'm not a super fan. I couldn't tell you, his parents' names. I couldn't tell you,
right,
stuff like that, but I love the music. And
he's no Picard.
No. But I do appreciate his music, and it is a good festival to go to. It's just, of course, with COVID going on, it's not happening this year. But next year it should be back on, and hopefully. But no, excellent pick. No, you make a great point there. Like Elvis he's the king of rock and roll for a reason. He changed it for everything, made everything better. But all right, I guess that's it. We've reached the end of the episode. But before we go, let's play that little game of where can we find you on the internet. Did we lose Richard?
Yeah, he messaged in the chat that his kid woke up and he had to bounce.
Oh, that's too bad. I didn't see that. All right. That was Richard Reeder. He guest stars on the Pop Culture Pub from time to time, and I'm sure he'll be back for the summer edition of Geek Fallout. So, Chris, where can we find you on the internet, sir?
As far as I know, you can find me at Alias Ego on Twitter. And I think that's about it.
Excellent.
I've kind of disappeared.
Hey, there's nothing wrong with that. I don't blame you. Social media kind of sucks from time to time. Kev, where can we find you, sir?
I was going to say, the funny thing is I'm trying to increase mine. you can find me across the internet at Mast Library. And masterlibrary.com is my home blog. And then I'm also, if you enjoy my voice on this show, I also host a wrestling show over on the Retro Network called The House Show, and we have our spin-off one-on-one interview show for that too.
Excellent. Excellent. I'm Chris Lockhart. I'm on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram at ChrisLock1701. I occasionally blog at randomnerdness.blogspot.com. I manage 3 groups on Facebook. We got the Pop Culture Pub Podcast Network. I also am the admin of the Incredible Fans of the Incredible Hulk, and a new one I started called Outer Spaces. It's a space and space entertainment group. So if you want to check that out, by all means. So on behalf of myself, Chris Lockhart, and my co-podcasters, Chris Gaeta, Kevin Decent, and Richard Reeder, I would like to thank you, dear listener, for taking the time to listen to our podcast episode. This was Geek Fallout Spring 2021, and we will see you again in the not-too-distant future. Hey there, fellow podcast listener. This is Chris Lockhart, also known as ChrisLock1701.
I am the host of the newest podcast to join the Atomic Geeks Podcasting Network. And that podcast is...
The Random Nerdness Podcast.
And as the title suggests, it's a podcast where I, with my fellow podcasters, discuss randomly nerdy things. So be sure to check us out on iTunes, and we are also available at www.randomnerdness.podbean.com.